Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest today is New York Superintendent of Financial Services, Benjamin Losky. The first to hold the position, Losky supervises insurance companies, banks, and other financial services entities. He was previously Governor Cuomo's chief of staff and began his career as chief counsel to U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Benjamin Losky, what a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me at this very serious time.
It is serious. Let's sort of just give the people at home an idea of what you've been doing in your job, and then we'll just go right to the storm, okay?
Sure.
What do you do?
The new Department of Financial Services, about a year old now, was created by the governor. And it's funny because people think of it as new, but we're at once very new and also very old, because primarily we are the combination of two of the oldest regulatory agencies in the country, the Banking Department of the State of New York, which was formed in 1851, and the Insurance Department of the State of New York, which was formed in 1859. So the governor, having lived through the financial crisis as Attorney General, really thought that regulators, some of the regulators' powers and jurisdiction sort of weren't up to snuff pre-financial crisis and into the financial crisis. And he did a lot of thinking about that. We did a lot of thinking about that as Attorney General and then in his campaign and then when he became governor, and really decided that what we needed in New York was a more holistic, combined financial regulator that regulated both insurance and banking and all the financial products that fall in the gaps between those two. And so that's how the idea was formed by the governor, and ultimately working with the legislature, we passed a bill, and the new DFS went into action October 3rd, 2011. So we've been doing it for about a year, and the bulk of what we do is still largely what the banking department and what the insurance department did previously, which is make sure that the banks in the state of New York and the insurance companies in the state of New York are safe and sound and healthy and will be able to pay claims and have enough money for when people withdraw money out of their accounts. And then at the same time, as the new agency, we're trying to be very effective as we can in sort of policing the markets and making sure consumers are getting what they deserve and what they bargain for. And then lastly, we're also trying to be, as a new agency, a new combined agency, under Governor Cuomo's direction, a real model for state efficiency. And so we're trying to do what we did before and do it better, but with less cost. And in our first year, we did cut our budget about 10%, and we were pretty proud of that. And we're going to continue to try and do all those things, but do them efficiently.
Now, we know that Elliot Spitzer was known as the sheriff of Wall Street. Are you guys the new sheriff?
Oh, I don't think of it that way. I think there are a lot of different regulators and agencies in the state of New York who do a great job. And for a number of us, one of our jobs is to make sure Wall Street is living up to the standards it should be. And especially post-financial crisis, I think people are very attuned to whether Wall Street and whether banks and insurance companies, how they're acting and have they changed their ways. And as a regulator, you know, we're not a cop, first and foremost. We're much more of an agency that works with the industries we regulate to ensure they're doing the right thing. At the same time, when there is egregious conduct, which there sometimes is, we have to be willing to act aggressively. So that's how we approach the job at DFS, and that's sort of our mandate from the governor, and we'll continue to do that.
Has there been any egregious conduct that you've ferreted out in your time here?
Well, I mean, I have a couple of examples. One is early on, we started looking at a particular bank that was involved with concealing transactions with sanctioned countries, particularly Iran, and this was the Standard Chartered case. And after we looked at that for a while, we determined that it was very, very serious conduct. And, you know, no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, I think everyone can agree that allowing a state like Iran to engage in these transactions when they're sanctioned is a very, very big deal and should not be allowed. And so we took pretty strong action against Standard Chartered. They ended up paying a $340 million fine, and we put a monitor inside them, and we're going to keep watching them very closely. So that was one example. Another, you know, we've also been looking, though, at some other areas that are very significant. On the life insurance side, there was a situation where insurance companies, when sadly an individual who had a policy would pass away, they were not seeking out the beneficiaries of those policies. Rather, they would just wait to see if someone made a claim. And so it turned out that especially middle, lower-class people who didn't have these huge policies that maybe a richer person would have, sometimes their kin didn't know that there was a policy from 25 years ago worth $25,000, let's say, and they wouldn't make a claim. And it turns out the insurance companies were sitting on that money, and they were sitting on it for years and years. And when we started to look into it, along with other regulators, there were hundreds of millions of dollars not being paid out to people. And that was a real problem, and we basically ordered the companies to start actively seeking out the beneficiaries of these policies and seeing if they could find them. And a lot of money now has flowed back to consumers, so that's another example.
Ben Lusky, let me jump to the story of the year, of course, and maybe of the century, and that is what's happened in New York City and Long Island and Westchester County. Obviously, a lot of people have insurance policies, and I guess all of us have considered the idea that maybe some of these companies may go broke. What happens?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, never say never, but these insurance companies, we regulate them very carefully, and they're very well capitalized because we regulate them carefully. They also, companies that insure individual homes and businesses for catastrophe risks tend to reinsure a lot of that risk as well. So, yes, I'm a company. I promise to pay you $100 if you're house catches on fire, but then I go to another company, a reinsurer, and say, if that house catches on fire, I want to offload that risk, and I pay them a little bit of money. And so if your house catches on fire, yes, I owe you $100, but this other reinsurer then owes me, let's say, $50, $70. So the risk is offloaded, and the reinsurers are these huge financial conglomerates who typically, again, we regulate and other regulators regulate to make sure they're well capitalized as well. So I don't think there's a danger that insurers are going to run out of money, but I think we're more focused right now on sort of on the ground as individuals start to recover and small businesses start to recover from the storm. Are the insurance companies getting them the money they owe them quickly enough? And we want to make sure that happens. What we found from Irene was it was very important for the insurers to act quickly. Because especially with small businesses and even homeowners who want to get back on their feet, if they can get some funds in the short term, it's a huge boost. If they can't get their money in the short term, often things spiral out of control, and then you have a real impact on the markets.
You've been, obviously, your staff and you have been having conversations. I note that the president got off the helicopter with Chris Christie the other day and announced that he didn't want 15 minutes of anybody who made a telephone call not being returned, and he doesn't want red tape. So red tape is money in this case, as you just suggested, and how are you making that happen?
Well, right from the get-go, I mean, even before the storm started, the governor knew it was coming and basically directed all of us in his administration and to, you know, start planning ahead. And so we started at DFS talking with the big insurers, and we know who they are, obviously. We went through this with Irene and started talking with them already about how we were going to handle this, how to communicate quickly, how to be working together so that we're able to get people what they need. And one of the big issues, of course, is when there's a big storm, you have to send, the insurance companies have to send adjusters to look at the damage, and then once the adjuster has assessed the damage, then a check can be cut by the insurance company. The problem is there's only so many licensed adjusters in the state. So we started talking with the industry and said, we will issue emergency licenses to more adjusters from other states, let's say, to get them here so these claims can be adjusted more quickly. And already we've issued, about 36 hours ago, it's probably more now, but it was over 700 emergency licenses. So now we have 700 more people who can deploy as adjusters for the insurance companies into the communities that were impacted to help people get back on their feet and then cut those checks, which are very, very important. And they're not only important to the people. Remember, people, every dollar that an insurance company pays is a dollar less an individual would have to pay or a dollar less that a governmental entity would have to pay. So it's good from both sides.
You have to use a carrot and a stick, obviously, in dealing with these guys. Yeah. It sounds carrot-y to me a little bit. You know, we have conversations with them. But what's the stick?
Well, look, we're their regulator. That is a long-term relationship. It's sort of like being married. We're not going away. We're going to be with them. And they need to have a good relationship with us. We need to have a good relationship with them. And look, it is always better to use carrots as much as you can and work together and be professional and be rational and make smart decisions. At the same time, they're businesses and they have profit motive. And, you know, that is something that sometimes we bump into when we want them to do maybe a little more than they want to do that affects their bottom line. But, you know, the one thing you have to realize about insurance is they're also in business to make people feel like they're doing a good job. And, you know, people have insurance for just this kind of event. This is what insurance is for. And we know that, and the companies know that. And if you pay your premiums all year round and year after year where you don't have any kind of calamity, and that's fine because you know when there is a major storm like this or something terrible happens in your life, that insurance will step up. And we have to, as DFS, make sure that happens. But I think most companies want to do that because it's reputational for them. They know that this is the business they are in.
Well, you know, I don't know, Ben. I live in Massachusetts right over the line here, but I can tell you this much. We paid for years, and then finally a tree fell on our house, and we filed, and they paid it, and then something else happened, and it was second claim, and then they turned around and canceled our insurance. And apparently this stuff goes on all the time.
Well, look, that is a very fair point, and it is something we worry about, the availability of certain types of insurance for, let's take an example, coastal areas on Long Island.
Sure.
And we want to make sure that people who live on the coast have insurance that's available for them. Is it going to be expensive? Sure, because there tend to be storms, and the storms tend to hit the coast, and mm-hmm. the damage tends to be greater when you live along a body of water,
sure.
especially salt water. But you want to be in a situation that even if it's expensive for those who choose to have a house on the coast, it's at least possible to get it. And it's something we watch very carefully. And there was an availability problem maybe a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, our most recent assessment, which was a couple months back, was there is more than enough insurance available. It can be expensive. Depending on what kind of coverage you're getting. But that is available.
I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about, you know, you pay and then you have two claims in a year and they say, no, we don't do that. And they cancel your insurance. You got other insurance, of course.
Yeah.
It's available, but that seems to me that's bad behavior.
Yeah, look, it's troubling. There's no question. And we have seen that happen. I'll be totally honest with you. Certain companies decided... we have regulations that only allow them to cancel a certain percentage of policies each year.
Interesting.
But they tend to, we had one company, a big company, who decided they were going to, for statewide, they had, I forget if it's 1% or 5%, but they were going to use that entire cancellation percent and do it all along, only along the coast.
Hmm.
And it's a big company, so it's a lot of policies. And, you know, we had to wrestle with what we could do, given that they were allowed to do it legally. When we went and looked, we saw that there was sufficient availability from other companies. So, you know, it was okay. People, yes, did get canceled, but they could go to another big insurer who would insure them and just get a new policy. Is it inconvenient? Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. 2008, we have this tremendous meltdown. We have the federal government obviously involved in this. We have you. What are we doing to make sure this doesn't happen again?
You mean the financial crisis?
Yes.
Well, it's a great question, and I think we have to do a number of things. One is regulators need to step up and do a better job than they were doing before. And at the same time, we need to remember that the problems of the past that we tend to focus on are often not the problems of the future. And it's something I've been a little worried about. We've all been very focused on, well, how do we make sure the financial crisis doesn't happen again? That's a very fair question to ask. But we do need to think not only about that question, but about what does the future hold? And that's very hard because you have to predict where things are going. But, you know, we can spend all our time talking about who's responsible for the financial crisis and whether enough CEOs have been prosecuted and gone to jail. At the same time, we need to spend time thinking, what is the next issue our financial system faces? And one of them, for example, is, cybercrime, cyber terrorism. And are the systems in our banks, in our financial system, ready for the kind of hacking we're starting to see more and more of from overseas? And so it's something we've started to focus on at DFS. It's something that people like Cy Vance at Manhattan DA and Preparar, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, have all started to focus on as well. And I think that's great because it's a tricky situation to have to focus on the wrongs of the past, but also the problems potentially coming in the future. But we have to do that. And when you combine what's happening with cyber terrorism and hacking with the fact that the banking system is changing before our eyes because of technology, and you have this very tightly regulated banking system that is colliding with a very unregulated traditionally technology sector, it makes it a very tricky proposition. How are we going to regulate these new mobile wallets? How are we going to regulate all the online banking that is happening? And who should be the regulator, given that you can be anywhere in the world and executing your banking or trading that way? So these are all very tough issues that regulators have to work together on and think very creatively about to keep our system safe and sound. And DFS, we're trying to be a part of that going forward.
So how do you get along with the feds? I mean, you know, you watch Law and Order and they're always fighting the FBI and the local police.
Well, you know, there are tensions always between different regulators, state, federal, local. You try to be professional about it and work with others whenever you can. Sometimes that's not possible in a specific situation, but the default rule, I think, typically should be that regulators should try and work together. A little competition between regulators isn't unhealthy. I think it can be a good thing, keeps you on your game. It makes you want to do a better job because you want to live up to the kind of standards that other regulators are living up to. As long as it's a race to the top and not a race to the bottom, I think a little competition is fine. But that said, generally, the system is better served when regulators work together, and we have a great relationship with most of the regulators most of the time. You know, there are always exceptions.
How are we doing on foreclosures, Ben?
Foreclosures is a huge problem, and it is something the governor is very focused on, you know, what we should be doing going into the next year and what have we done this past year. It is something that is too easily ignored, and we have a system that's not working that well. The housing sector is starting to recover, it seems. But you have a lot of people, and they're often the people you don't hear that much from because they're, you know, don't have the access to make the noise you might otherwise make in the political system. But you've got a governor who's a former HUD secretary who is very focused on housing and foreclosures and what we're going to do about it. We've spent a lot of time in the last year moving around the state in a mobile command center that when it's not being used for disaster relief, as it is now, we use for foreclosure relief. And we go down into the communities and we talk to people about what they're facing. And then as a bank regulator, we try to work with the banks to see if we can get their loans either modified or get them into one of the federal programs so they can get out from these underwater mortgages before they end up being foreclosed upon. And a lot of banks want to do that because foreclosure isn't a great route for the banks either. It's just this very difficult capacity issue where you want to make sure that the banks have enough capacity to deal with all the homeowners who want to come in and say, how do I renegotiate my loan? How do I stay in my home? It is so important for our financial system that we keep people in their homes wherever we can. And it's so important for people, frankly, on a human level and their families. So we're going to try to do that, and this governor is very, very focused on it.
I saw something from your office about hurricane deductibles, and it wasn't a hurricane by the time it reached New York. How did that all play out?
Well, it's interesting. It was a very, very serious storm, and I haven't checked this, but someone told me that the barometric pressure for this storm was sort of the highest in history. So it was a very, very powerful storm.
You mean lowest?
Lowest, sorry. You can tell I haven't taken science in a while. But the way the homeowners' policies that most people have are typically written are there's an extra deductible that is a percentage of the fair market value of the home, which is a big number often on the coast, that the homeowner has to pay out of pocket or the small business has to pay out of pocket if they're damaged, and it can be from 1 to 5%, and that's a big chunk of change. But those deductibles are based on whether there are sustained hurricane winds in this storm when it hits land in New York. And the governor had us take a look at it, and it turned out that the winds were not, it's got to be 74 miles an hour typically for hurricane winds, and they were not sustained winds when landfall happened in New York, and therefore the deductibles don't apply. And the governor made that announcement, and I think that's going to save homeowners a big chunk of change, and it's good news.
Wow. So what about payday lenders? I know that you guys are concerned about, you know, people who prey on the poor who have no other place to go but a check cashing joint.
Yeah. I mean, look, payday lending, first of all, is illegal in the state of New York. And hopefully the check cashers and everyone else knows that. There is a movement nationwide, and it's touched a little bit in New York, to try and have payday lending in this state, as they do in certain other states. But you're exactly right. We have to protect the most vulnerable amongst us. And unfortunately, when you don't have much, people often have to get themselves into situations where they go into debt and they live in debt. And what we want to make sure is there aren't abuses so that the poorest and the most vulnerable among us are getting the worst deals. And it's something, I'll be honest with you, at DFS in our first year, just putting the agency together and doing everything we did not do enough on that issue, and we did not do enough when it came to all the check cashers and all the other financial services we license around the state that serve the most vulnerable and the poorest among us. And what we need to do, I'm hoping in the second year, at the governor's direction, is really focus on that as well. And I really look forward to that, because it is a very important task that we help people who are in those situations and could end up feeling that kind of abuse. So we did hire someone recently who's an expert in this area, and she's going to be great. And hopefully in the year ahead, we'll do a lot more in that area.
Very quickly, you have two constitutional officers. You only have a minute to do this in, and it's not really fair, but the comptroller and the attorney general. How are you getting along with them in terms of jurisdictions?
Fine. I mean, we have a very good relationship with both. We actually we are represented when we get sued, which sometimes happens because we're a state agency. Mm-hmm. We're represented by the attorney general, and we had a big lawsuit where we had one of my predecessors had done something related to a company called MBIA, and a bunch of banks sued this monoline insurer and the department. And the attorney general's office represented us, and they did just a fantastic job. We sometimes, as we investigate cases, will refer them because we don't have prosecutorial authority. And so all systems have been go. We have a good relationship there. There is so much important work to be done in this state, and so much work to go around, that having another set of boots on the ground, I think, has been just fine. And I hope the comptroller and the AG feel the same way. I have no reason to think they don't.
Our guest has been New York Superintendent of Financial Services, Benjamin Losky. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. We very much appreciate it. You're always welcome back.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be with you. Take care.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.